Hey, welcome everyone to our second YPT podcast. I hope you all enjoyed our first one on how to write grant applications. Please go and have a look at it if you all haven't already on Spotify and Transplant Live now. Today, we're going to be talking about how to organize a successful fellowship. So in the field of transplantation, fellowships are a major part of most people's career progression. There's no doubt that a carefully thought out and planned fellowship in the right place at the right time and with the right people can really set you up for the rest of your career. There's some fantastic opportunities for fellowship across the European transplant centers. And we are very lucky to have on our YPT board several committee members who've done successful transplant fellowships across Europe. And we thought we'd interview some of them today and bring you some of their personal stories and hopefully give you an insight into what they went through, how they went through it, and hopefully use that, you can use that information to plan your own fellowships. So we hope at the end of this podcast, you'll have an idea of what to consider when organizing a podcast, what the pitfalls to look out for, and what you need to do around to get it successful. So without further delay, we're going to start introducing our guests. We've got three guests today. We've got Hannah Escher, and we've got Caroline and Gianluca. So over to you, Stan.
Yes. So our first guest is Hannah Escher, who is performing her specialty training in general and transplant surgery at the University of Innsbruck in Austria and her fellowships at the Forbes Lab at the University of Edinburgh, and is our current YPT chair. So welcome, Hannah.
Hi there.
Can you tell us a bit about what you're doing in your fellowship?
So I'm mainly doing a clinical research training fellowship, and I'm really doing wet lab-based fellowship. So my fellowship is mainly about research. I don't do much clinical work. When I started into my project, I still did some clinical work to support my living. But then once I got a grant, then I decided to fully concentrate on my research. And now I'm doing a full-time research project in the lab.
So we will get into detail on how you got your fellowship and what you did in the path towards it. But first, our second guest, Dr. Caroline Dudry, if I pronounce it rightly, who is a nephrologist trained at Tours in France and worked at the transplant unit of the Henri Mondor University Hospital in Paris, and was a senior clinical fellow at the Guy's and St. Thomas in London, and is a current fellow at the King's College. Can you tell us what you are doing currently in your fellowship?
Thank you very much for the nice introduction. So I am, same as Hannah, mainly doing science work at the moment. So I got in 2018 the ESA Transplant Fellowship, which helps me to have a year of funded fellowship at King's College. I work within Giovanna Lombardi's lab on a very fancy cutting edge technique called CAR. And this year helped me to be able to apply for grants and secure funding to do a full PhD. And this is what I'm doing at the moment. I am a clinical training fellow and working in a sister lab, a Darling lab, exploring memory immune responses in highly sensitized patients.
Thank you very much. And then to Dylan to introduce our last guest.
So, yeah, so it's a great pleasure to introduce Gianluca, who I've known for at least 7 or 8 years now. We actually met as fellows at Guy's Hospital in London. Gianluca did his specialty training in general surgery at the University of Modena in Italy. And then he came over to the UK and did a number of fellowships across the UK in Oxford, in Edinburgh, and several in London. After completing those successfully, he was appointed as assistant professor and consultant transplant and hepatobiliary surgeon at Federico University Hospital in Naples. Welcome, Gianluca. Nice to have you.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Dylan. Sure. I've been around quite a lot across 6 years in the UK because I was focusing, as you rightly said, both on abdominal organ transplantation and HPV surgery. So I moved after a few years from one center to another in order to pursue both aspects of this career. And then it helped me a lot in transitioning from the trainee phase to my current consultant both academic and clinical post here in Naples.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Gianluca. So I think we've got a little bit of a flavor of what each of you guys did for your fellowships. We wanted to just open it up for a discussion, really, and talk about and go through some of the aspects of both organizing and going through a fellowship and see what we can gain from each of these three guests who've been through it. So I guess one of the first questions is why we should be doing a fellowship and why are fellowships important? And when is the best time in your career to do it? Start off with Gianluca. Any comments on that?
Sure. Like the answer is always, it depends. It depends what you want to get and what your goals are. So I think there should be there could be a place for a fellowship no matter the stage of your career. It depends which goals are you pursuing. So very early on in your training, you may look to confront yourself with a different system and see the same things done in a different way, learn a foreign language, a different system, create contacts and relationship with other universities or centers. Later on, you may focus on getting some specific clinical skills, medical, surgical, or research skills and opportunities. So I think it should not be relegated to a specific timing. It depends on what your goals are. And the fellowship helps you to reach and or expand your learning and training opportunities further to your current post and university.
That's absolutely right, isn't it? And I think it's fair to say most people, you know, tend to do their fellowships at the end of their formal training, you know, just before they get their consultant job. And it may be that they do it because they just need their overall experience. It could also be that they want to gain skills or knowledge in a particular area. So, you know, so you've got to kind of decide why you're doing the fellowship and tailor it according to that. Would you say, Caroline, that's the same in nephrology as well? Is it? Do you think the timing of the fellowship is? Would you say it's the same in the medical specialties?
I would say so, in a way that basically when you're, you know, at the end of your training, you have probably the bigger picture on your specialty, and you have as well enough knowledge to be able to potentially criticize what you've been learning and what you've seen before. On the other hand, even an early fellowship might be interesting, as Gianluca just said, in order to see that we are doing some things in a slightly different ways in different countries, but at the end of the day, the patients are treated, you know, well.
Yeah, and I think going to Hannah, research-wise, research fellowships, Hannah, what do you think is, having been through it, what do you think is a good time to take up a research fellowship?
I think I can only echo what they said before. It absolutely depends. And I think what is also really important with these fellowships is probably when you have the opportunity or the chance to do something like this and you think it might be worth it and it might be a great opportunity, then you just have to seize it and just do it. And I think there's no waiting for the right time or waiting until the end of the training when you have the option now, or let's say at the moment your circumstances don't allow you to do a fellowship, then there's absolutely no harm in doing it at a later stage during your training. So I started my PhD kind of in the middle, or let's say after one third of my surgical training, because at that time there arose an opportunity and I took the opportunity and I started my PhD. But I can't say this is the only and the best time point. As Gianluca and Caroline said, it absolutely depends.
That's great. Stan, I'm going to pass over to you.
I wanted to ask Hannah, because you were telling about starting it on one third of your career, what was the opportunity you were offered and how did you get into the path of your current fellowship?
Where I trained in Innsbruck, and for us in Innsbruck, or it was very clear because my boss there, Professor Schneeberger, wants us all to do research, and he wants us to do some kind of PhD. We can either do a clinical PhD in Innsbruck, or he gives us the opportunity to go abroad. And I had the opportunity to go abroad to Edinburgh with his help and try to start a PhD there. So we applied for the ESOT Transplant Fellowship to get me some funding in my first year of trying to figure out what I want to do for my PhD. That didn't work. So I first took up a job as a clinical research fellow at the Royal Infirmary of Edinburgh, and then tried there to find a PhD opportunity. What do I want to do for my PhD and how can I fund it? And then I ended up in the lab where I am now, in the Forbes lab, in a research center where I thought I would never end up at, and I would never have thought of doing a PhD there if somebody would have asked me before. So it's complete wet lab research, something I never thought I would do, but I actually really enjoyed it. And once I knew what I wanted to do, then we applied again for several grants and I got rejected several times. But luckily my supervisor in the lab always supported me. And so at one point then I got a grant from the Medical Research Council here in the UK, and then I could really fully focus on this PhD.
So in the end, you were happy that you just went, and on the path towards it, you found your project, your mentors and your funding, which is of course great, but not an easy way, I guess. Did you also have moments that you already left Innsbruck and did not have a real plan forward that you thought, maybe I have to go back?
Oh, yes. I faced that moment several times, because at one point when you get several grant applications rejected, and I had quit the job at the Royal Infirmary as a research fellow at that time to fully concentrate on wet lab research. And then you don't get the grant and you're just like, how will I do that if I don't get any money? And because it was so difficult at the beginning to find a project that I enjoy doing, and finding a supervisor and mentor who helps me through all of this, it was in the beginning a little bit sometimes frustrating and slow to get started. And it was always in the back of my head, oh, maybe I will have to go back to Innsbruck. But I can already say here that it was, for this situation, it's really, really important for me that I have such a good relationship with my mentors at home in Innsbruck in Austria, who always supported me along this way and always said, oh, Hannah, you'll find a way and it will all work out. Just keep trying. And we are here to support you. And whenever I needed help from the mentors at home, they actually helped me and tried to move me along the way so I can really dive into this PhD.
Sounds like a perfect mentee-mentor partnership. Now going to Caroline, for you, we also know the successes you had, but from the preparation for the podcast, we know that it was also not an easy path. Can you tell us how you got to what you are doing now in choosing your fellowships?
Yeah, so basically, as we discussed before, in France, it's a bit different. When you want to become an academic scientist, you wait until the end of your training after a master's degree to apply for a PhD. And I always knew I wanted to do a PhD abroad, but it was quite complicated to get funding. And because of personal circumstances, I have a family, basically. So I applied for funding, didn't get it. And then I decided to move to the UK, where I was, you know, applying for funding for, despite not having any funding. And I moved here, and before getting the ESOT Transplant Fellowship, I worked in Italy, basically to make a living. And it was an amazing opportunity to get, you know, as I said, the system, how things are working, etc. And then I was lucky enough to get the ESOT Transplant Fellowship and was, you know, fully supported by people back in France and, you know, in ESOT as well. And then when I got my fellowship, it was for science projects. Things take time. So if you want to produce some data to apply for a PhD fellowship, you need basically to have some dedicated time, as Hannah just said, to focus on the science. And that was this fellowship was just perfect. And I accumulated some data, I applied for funding. I wasn't successful straight away either, but I was at the end. And I am in the place now where my current mentor, Prof. Darling, is just an amazing man, and I'm really lucky and really happy.
Sounds as a good success story, and indeed a bit the same story as Hannah had, that you are going, but you will not have a project and the funding and everything arranged immediately, but you have to get your foot between the door to make a first step. Yeah. And of course, amazing that the ESOT Fellowship was for you that first step which brought you to the current PhD. Going forward to Gianluca, how was that for you?
All my fellowships were very much clinically oriented, so wasn't through specific connections. So the jobs are usually advertised on a website and everyone can apply. And so did I. I felt that I was moving towards the end of my training, and I always, since the very beginning, I knew that I wanted to focus on transplants and HPB. So I knew which institutions could help me in progressing in this path, in this career. And then when the first one of these jobs came up, which was the one at Guy's Hospital in London in kidney and pancreas transplantation, I immediately applied and I asked for a meeting to meet the clinical lead and have a look at the unit, which is a thing that I strongly recommend to visit for even for a day or two, the unit where you think you would like to spend some time or do a research or clinical fellowship and see how they work, what your job will be like, what your working plan will be like, and see if you are a mutual good match, if you are the right person for the job, and if that place is the best place that could help you achieve your goals, depending on what are your priorities at that time of your career. It may be different if you are just starting a training program, are halfway through, at the end, or just finished, and you want to master some very specific skills to bring with you in your consultant jobs applications or in your consultant post. So I applied for the job. I met the team of the unit. It worked out for both of us. And then I got the job and start working there. And once you are, let's say, into the system, you take a small step, but this opens 1,000 doors. So you know that there are other places, other centers. Luckily, it was an environment that allowed me to develop and reach my goals fairly quickly within a year or two. So I've been supported by my current employers to apply for new jobs that could help me progressing. So I moved from one job to the other. When I had the priority to look a bit more into kidney and pancreas transplant, I tried to find the centers and the job that allowed me to develop that specific area. And when I felt that I should focus more on HPB or minimally invasive HPB, I tried to apply for jobs that were more focused in that sectors. Of course, some of my applications were successful, some other weren't.
You had really clear goals in mind, indeed, which is, of course, good for you. But I guess that most people in the same positions do not always have their goals and also their path so clearly in mind. Did you have any mentors that followed the same path or other examples that you followed?
Not really, but they had the luck to meet many, many people and work in many international environments. So I always confronted myself and had chats and asked questions and suggestions with all my colleagues. So I tried to collect as many information as possible and try to figure out what would do for me and what would be the best fit. So I didn't have all my goals very clear from the beginning. It's more dynamic. You know, the more you progress, the more you try to have very clear short-term goals, fairly clear mid-term goals, and some, you know, long-term goals. And then you try to move across and be as flexible as possible and try to adapt to the situation. As Hannah said earlier on, sometimes an unexpected good opportunity comes up, and then it's up to you to take it.
If I can add to Gianluca's comments, we often, in looking for fellowships, have to take the brave step in contacting professors and supervisors in other hospitals far away. I don't know what the rest of you guys did. In some of my cases, I, you know, sent across an email, and I think the email has to be nicely structured with a CV attached to it, perhaps even a letter of recommendation from a well-known figure in your own unit. That's often very helpful. And a personal statement on where you're going, why you want to do a fellowship. I think, would you agree that, you know, that's quite important in contacting people, Gianluca?
Very, and very much to do it the right way, as you said, yes. Another important thing that Caroline mentioned earlier on is, what's your plan? If you're going into a different system, different country to figure out if you should move there and build your career there, or you're looking after some very specific skills to bring back home, because in that way, probably you're planning your steps in a slightly different way. If you want to transition to a new system, you should know what your CV is structured like and what actually your equal, let's say, level of training or career should look like in the country you're moving into. And often it's not the same. So many fellows need to try to fill the gaps, because you trained following a specific path that may be slightly or very much different from the one of the country you're moving into.
And I guess the other aspect of preparing is talking to the current fellows who are doing that fellowship at the moment, and getting an idea of what experiences they're getting. I mean, the kind of things that you probably want to be looking at are what is your day-to-day activity going to be? What are your actual responsibilities? Who are the rest of the faculty, or who are the rest of the consultants on that? If you're doing a clinical fellowship, what are the case volumes trainee or fellow is getting? And what are the academic opportunities if you're just doing a clinical fellowship? If it's a research fellowship, again, I guess, Hannah, you would agree that you need to, have a good conversation with previous clinical fellows and get as much from them as you can. And, for example, if you suddenly turn up and not realize that you're doing organ retrievals when you're not expecting to do it, that would be a bit of a shock. So you kind of want to know those things beforehand. Would you say that? Do you agree with that, Hannah?
I have to say that I'm the least planning person probably in this panel, because I didn't plan out my whole thing. So it was basically, for me, always I had a plan A, and plan A until now always failed, and we had to go to plan B urgently. So the step of planning plan B out was missed in a lot of opportunities. I think that, yes, you should obviously have some plan in your mind, but sometimes it's also very good to be very flexible on what you want to achieve. Like in this sense, I know we all have a bigger aim of what we want to achieve in our career, but especially when you're younger, it helps if you are flexible. So as I said, I would never ever have found the lab that I'm in now if I would have planned out everything when I was in Innsbruck. This opportunity just came up when I was in Edinburgh. I didn't even know that this lab exists. And now I have a very nice PhD, and I got a very nice opportunity to join this lab and do very, very nice science. But if I would have planned it out that way, that would never have been the way that I planned it. I think it's more difficult if you are like Caroline, you move with your whole family. But for me, it was actually very good to be that flexible and not have everything planned out in the small details.
It's great to hear the different experiences that each of you have had. Just sticking on the point of finances and funding, I mean, there is, particularly if you're coming from abroad, there's so much to think about, isn't it? It's not just about getting the fellowship. It's about what are the finances that you need? What are the paperwork that you need? Visas, for example, accommodation, and all of these things need to be taken into account. I wondered if Caroline, if you can share some of the experiences that you had, particularly coming from France to the UK. What are the other things that you had to do and think about apart from just getting the job?
I guess the main thing is when you're not on your own and you have a partner. I was lucky enough to have a partner who will get a salary. So I think I was quite lucky in my case. It might be not the case for all women who wanted to do some research or a fellowship abroad, and they may have to decide to bring their partner and children or not with them. I think I was lucky enough to have a partner who had the same sort of goal as me and who had a salary. I think the positive of ESOT in general is that the diploma was at least before recognized, and as clinician scientists, we you always have the opportunity to work as a clinician as well. So at the end, this is what I did. I work as a clinician, and it was a great opportunity. But yeah, of course, you have to think about tons of things. Childcare, schools, getting just a roof over your head. What is the best location? Visa for some people who needs it, and probably post-Brexit. There is a lot to think about, and sometimes it's a bit complicated. So that's why maybe it's easier to do it earlier in your career for some. I would like to emphasize that you may have great opportunities even at the end of your training, and it's probably not the best time in terms of everything fitting together, but it's always worth just checking and thinking about it, because I think I will encourage anybody to do so if possible. But there is always a part of risk and of some sort of insecurity and uncertainty, but at the end, I think it's worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a key point, that all of these things involve an element of risk. But if you don't take that risk, you don't get the gain out of it. And as you said, there's quite a lot of to think about. And sometimes having friends who are and colleagues who are already in post in that unit is often helpful, because they may be able to help you out in telling you, which where to live, which schools to go for. And I think the other key thing is mentorship. And I think Stan's is going to ask a few questions about mentorship and how important that is, both internally and externally.
Yes, indeed. I think of all these stories, you hear that the path towards the success you guys had is not easy. So some guidance is always important. And Gianluca already told that he did not have a real mentor that followed the same path. And Hannah, you told us that you had some mentors back in Austria that supported you along the way. Can you tell us how they supported you when everything was not that easy, when your first grants were not accepted?
I think the support that they made were basically just continue to tell me that I'm doing the right thing. And sometimes a little bit of connections help. So if they knew people they could speak to, then they would always offer to talk to that people. And that actually helped me a lot. Also, my supervisor in Innsbruck connected me with my supervisor in Edinburgh. And that was kind of the initial contact that they made for me so that I could start in Edinburgh. And then that supervisor in Edinburgh then put me into the lab where I'm now. So it was all over connections. And I'm really thankful that I had all these supervisors who helped me.
That's great indeed. And Caroline, you are, besides doing the fellowships and having had mentors yourself, you are working on a project for YPT. And how do you think connecting people with each other can help to build fruitful fellowships and connections in Europe?
So, I mean, YPT has two different projects which will help on this side. The first part is the ESOT map unit. So we're going to set up a map of all transplant units for every organ within the ESOT countries. This is working in progress and will go live in a couple of months. And the idea will be for trainees to be able to identify places where they would want to train for a specific technique, for example, but it will be as well an opportunity for the centers to advertise the jobs and more long-term for every unit to basically, for example, work on a specific, projects. So this is one bit, and I think this is quite important for a young professional to be able to identify each unit, because they may know that this is happening in this country or in this city, but they may not know. And I hope it will increase the opportunity for people and for example smaller units to be able to advertise jobs as well. So this is the first part, and then there will be a mentee program which is work in progress with the education committee. We'll probably learn a bit more in the next few months about that. Probably in the meantime, I think I would encourage anybody, young or not so young, to get in touch, of course, with the old and very experienced professor, but even with younger people. Talk to as many people as possible ask them about their experience, because you will find out that it's never been easy for anybody. Academic and even life as a clinician is always, you always have hurdles on the way. And I think this, in terms of mentorship, this is probably a nice way to feel encouraged on your side as well. Just to know that other people has issues in the past, and it's normal that, it's not straightforward, but it will work out at the end if you're working hard.
I think we all can feel that indeed the connections between younger people are important as well. And that is what we are working on with YPT within ESAT. For Gianluca, you're already at the stage in your career that you will become a mentor for people yourself. Are you already guiding people in the same path that you took with your fellowships abroad?
Sure. Yes, we do have several trainees here. I try not to push them to have my same path, but to help them identify what's the best path for themselves. And that, like every patient is different, every trainee is different. Aspects that Caroline mentioned are great and I wish were available when sometimes I got a bit lost because of the lack of information about the units, where to get a fellowship, or too many conflicted information and therefore maybe unreliable. I didn't have, as Hannah, a big important mentor overlooking the bigger picture of my career, but I found many mentors, especially in my peers or senior colleagues, and sharing experience with people that are going through the same phase or just been through the same phase of their career and just faced the same problems, the same issues. I found it very important and supportive and helped me quite a lot in taking these big steps.
Gianluca, can I ask you about your, once you're in post, how to make the best out of the fellowship? I guess having good supervisors within the unit is an important thing, isn't it?
I've been extremely lucky because I've been very, very happy in every place I worked as a fellow, actually. And the first thing would be to be honest. To be honest yourself, don't pretend to be different from what you are. Of course, you need to highlight your strengths, but be honest about your needs. Say, like, I feel weaker in this specific area, so I'm here because I really think that you could help me in filling these gaps and become a better surgeon or physician. And then, as you said, have regular meetings if possible. So you set some short-term goals and then you see which goals are you achieving and which ones are you not achieving and why, and try to work on those and making a plan. Every single surgeon or physician I work with has been very supportive during the job and in helping me getting the next job, the one that was the best fit for my needs and at my stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I guess the other thing to emphasize is the importance of getting good letters of recommendation and references at the end of your fellowship, because as Gianluca said, it's then important for your next step in your training or fellowship, isn't that right, Gianluca?
The transplant business is a small world, so everybody knows everyone. You don't even need sometimes to bring a letter with you. Like if your future possible boss knows that you're applying for the job or you just had an interview, probably they would talk to your current employer and ask how you're behaving, if you're a hard worker, if you're an enthusiastic person, and if you develop throughout the job. Often doesn't matter your starting point. Of course, you need to be sufficiently skilled to cover the post, but then everybody will appreciate it a lot to see you doing a journey where you arrived as a person and then you left as an enriched person, reaching some goals and getting several skills. And then you need to fit in with the team. So it's not just about business, but it's team working. And in transplant, it's very, very important. You need to fit well with nurses. You need to fit well with anesthetists, with surgeons from other teams, with other units, the physicians. That's very important. And then I think it's one of the key steps in taking most out of your fellowship.
Great. Thanks, Gianluca. So talking about fitting in, we all agree that doing a fellowship is not just about the work. It's about experiencing new places and new cultures, both in the hospital and outside. Hannah, do you want to tell us about the fantastic experiences and social experiences of living in sunny Edinburgh?
Yeah, sunny Edinburgh with the lovely summer and the high temperature. I really enjoyed my time in Edinburgh, and you learn a lot also as a person. So there are some challenges that come when you move to a different country. So just one example, as Gianluca said, you always need to be very direct and say what you want. So in the beginning, sometimes this was very challenging for me here in Britain because the German directness did not always fit well with the British politeness. So we had to adjust a little bit on my communication skills here in the UK. But it was good to learn it and to see things from a different perspective. I also think for me, it was very, very interesting to get together with all the scientists because they have a very, very different way of thinking and of how to approach a problem. So sometimes I'm speaking as the kind of the surgeon and the scientists don't have any idea what I'm talking about and what my problem is. And then the scientists speak and then I can kind of start to see where these things don't fit together. And I also have to say my lab is great. So we really had a lot of fun with pub quizzes, which is something that we don't have that much at home, and doing breakfasts and going out together. And it was really a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I think you just can't underestimate the value of the amount of friendships and networks that you develop in a fellowship. What's it been like in London, Caroline? Have you had a good time and, COVID barring?
Yeah, I can only just echo what just Hannah said. I think it's a combination of working with only scientists, and of course it sort of open your minds as a clinician to do some science as well, but that's more generic thing. And then I think I've probably underestimated before coming here the fact that basically there are people from the whole Europe here. You make friends from, Italy, Portugal, Malta, a lot of different places. Everyone goes together and this is just amazing. And of course, built very great friendships. And again, I think it's worth it. The personal part is worth it as well.
I guess Gianluca has actually done more traveling than most of us. He's been throughout the UK and undoubtedly knowing him well has had a good time. Is that right, Gianluca?
Oh, yes, very, very much. Definitely. I would like just to stress one point. One recommendation is don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to challenge yourself. If you feel it's a good thing and it's the right moment, don't be afraid to receive a no as an answer. Everybody fails. Everybody has up and downs. Just be open. Just be open, and many opportunities will come up, and then see many things. Meeting many people, work in different environments, will give you the chance to then collect all these experiences and mix and match all the best you've seen and done in order to create your future own way.
Yes, I think I also would like to stress that failure is a very, very important part of the journey as a fellow. I can tell from my experience that most of the things won't work the first time you try them, be that clinically or in science. In science, let's say 95% of the experiments don't work the first time you try them. And this is the same with everything as a fellowship. My boss, when I was crying when my first grant application failed miserably and the panel had picked me apart, and he was like, Hannah, this belongs to science. If you've not been picked apart by a grant panel, you have not done enough grant applications. So failure belongs to it. And if you just keep persisting and trying again, and you're sure that this is what you want to do and you enjoy doing it, then in the end, somehow, believe me or not, it will be successful.
Thanks, Hannah. Yeah, absolutely agree with that. It's so great to hear all the experiences that you guys have had. And I hope that this has been a useful podcast for all of you. We're going to end here and say thank you to all our wonderful guests who've come up, taken the time to share their experiences. Needless to say, I think it's fair to say that all of us are more than happy to be contacted personally if people are interested in fellowships. And all of us are more than happy to have one-on-one discussions with people if they wanted to and give our advice on particular fellowships. Thank you again for joining on this podcast. We will be on Spotify and on Transplant Live. Please go on Spotify and give us your reviews and send us your comments. Thank you, Hannah. Thank you, Gianluca. Thanks, Caroline and Stan. And as we said at our last podcast, embrace the journey that you're on.